L-E-T-E-N-P-C.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Hour number two now in full effect right here on the early line. It's Donnie Wrightside. It's Davis Maddox, SiriusXM channel 159. Welcome into the party, and the ASC is certainly going to be a party on the way out. As we said multiple times, only two teams have clinched here, the best of the rest. So let me ask you this question too, as you take a look at some teams waiting to get into the playoffs. We talk about the Jaguars. If they win, they're going to get in. Obviously, they'll be the division champion. You take a look at the Cleveland Browns. We think they're going to finish up with 12 wins here, but the question marks come in. I think the Buffalo Bills are in here, so let's remove them even from the conversation, Davis. Let's take a look at the Colts, the Texans, the Steelers, the Bengals, the Raiders, and the Broncos, all with legitimate chances to get in. So if I left you with those final teams for that one spot, let's just say Cleveland and Buffalo has it wrapped up, who gets that seventh seed for you?
I guess the Texans, maybe this, I don't know, man. The bottom of the AFC is the absolute dregs. Like, not one of those teams, I feel like, honestly, even deserves it at this stage. Like, no one wants to see the Broncos in a playoff game. I don't really want to see the Raiders. I don't really want to see I guess the Colts, actually. You know what? I'll say the Colts. I will say the Colts. Yeah, they play the most entertaining brand. That, you know, they got the dome, Minshew mania, like whatever. Like, and I mean, if Jake Browning can replicate what he did in those first two games, sure, then the Bengals. But I think sadly the Jake Browning experience is I think we're stepping off that ride.
Quick little shot here, and let's welcome in the radio audience. You're watching and listening live to the early line. It's Davis and Donnie in the morning, SiriusXM channel 159, talking a little playoff scenarios here in the AFC and the NFC. I know we talked about the top shelf for the NFC and also teams to get in like the Rams and how hot they could be. Let's do the same thing in the NFC quickly here. Seattle Seahawks currently sit as that seventh seed. Just behind them, the Vikings, the Falcons, the Packers, and the Saints. Are we already looking at our top seven in the NFC that the Seattle Seahawks will be included? Or do you think there might be a chance that either the Vikings, the Falcons, the Green Bay Packers, or the Saints can crash into that party?
Yeah, I think no chance. I think the Vikings, they kind of lost their chance in that game against the Lions. Like, they were not dead in that game against the Lions. I mean, Mullins only thrown two picks instead of four, I actually think they maybe could have came away from that game, because they were moving the ball when they were not turning the ball over. But I cannot have two NFC South teams making it. Like, just, I cannot live in a world where we've got multiple NFC South teams. So that is going to exclude the Falcons and the Saints. I guess the Packers, I wouldn't hate them making the playoffs, but I think probably actually what happens is they win this weekend against the Vikings, but then the Bears end up knocking them out in week 18, you know, just to kind of, the Bears will make their own pick slightly worse, you know, hilarious there. And, you know, one of the most interesting things in the entire NFL to me is like what's going on in the Bears organization right now, because I bet they are, every day they're arguing, every day they're sending emails, every day they're having meetings in the front office. What do we do about Justin? Do we give him the Daniel Jones contract? Do we trade him? Do we let him walk? Do we let him play next year with no contract extension? Do we take Marvin Harrison Jr. with this first pick? Do we try and trade? Like, it's got to be, I mean, it's a huge decision as an organization to make.
No, it certainly is. You're right about that. Every day it probably changes too. You might come in one day on a Tuesday arguing, on Wednesday arguing against yourself on what you think could happen, because the possibilities are endless here. And also, you're still monitoring Justin Fields over week 17 and 18 to see if he can be your franchise guy. Let's take a look here at another franchise guy. That's Aaron Rodgers of the New York Jets. We can't get enough of this story. I say to myself each and every week, finally, it's put to bed. We don't have to talk about Aaron Rodgers anymore. But that's never the case. Why? Because Aaron Rodgers now on a PR display across the world saying, it wasn't my choice to go on IR. Let's review what the New York Jets have said to Aaron Rodgers in the past. You want Nathaniel Hackett here? Got him. Is that going to help you get here? Okay, fine. You want your best friends on the football team, Alan Lazard, Randall Cobb, Tim Boyle? You got him here. Do you like the general manager because he lets you do whatever he wants? You want him next year? You got him here. How about Robert Saleh? We'll get rid of him if you don't like him here. We'll even make Nathaniel Hackett probably the head coach. That's your decision here. Nope, like all those guys back. Let's come back next year. And then all of a sudden, we're left to believe that Aaron Rodgers' agent and or him gets a phone call. What do you think about this, Aaron? We're going to activate you so you can practice with the team. We know you like to be around it, and you can still be in the fold even though we're not going to make the playoffs. And Aaron Rodgers responds, absolutely not. I will not take a spot away from another player who's going to lose a paycheck. And they go, you know, Aaron, we're going to overrule you on this. You're going to be activated. Now you're going to be the bad guy in the press. Congratulations. We're going to have you practice here. Is there any way possible, Davis, that Aaron Rodgers was overruled from being activated off the IR?
Aaron Rodgers is a crybaby who wants attention. I just like, okay. And I think a lot... Many people have many different reasons for why they don't like Aaron Rodgers, right? Some of them are political. Some of them are because they were fans of other NFC North teams. I promise you, I am not one of these people that hates Aaron Rodgers because he like makes fun of like political stances. That's not me. I hate Aaron Rodgers because Aaron Rodgers ran my friend out of the NFL. You might remember a guy from Saginaw Valley State named Jeff Janis. He had 101 receiving yards on one drive for Aaron Rodgers, bailed him out, completely bailed him out, won him a playoff game against the Arizona Cardinals. What was Jeff Janis's thanks? I don't like that guy. I like Jake Kumerow better. Get rid of him. I don't like him. Get rid of this guy. We need Jake Kumerow. Ran my buddy, ran my friend out of the NFL. For what? Because he wasn't in the inner circle, I guess. You know, he wasn't Randall Cobb. He wouldn't hang out. I don't know what for. He didn't like him. So he said, you know, I don't want to play with you anymore. So that is why I don't like Aaron Rodgers. I think Aaron Rodgers is a jerk. And this is just more evidence of him being a jerk because what's implicit in this is that he knows that we know he's lying, right? Everyone knows he's lying. He knows that we know he's lying about this. And I guess he's just saying, you know, because he is on the IR, he doesn't have to do media availability. He just goes on McAfee and does the McAfee show. So he doesn't get any pushback on this. And it's just, I am so annoyed with this guy. He is so annoying to me.
By the way, you bring up a good point there because I was going to bring up Jake Kumerow as well. I can remember one time in camp where they let him go, and I think Aaron Rodgers like went like in his post-practice press conference and talked about like 15 minutes how disappointed he was in the organization for letting Jake Kumerow go, as if that was the glue that held the Packers together and there was no way they would be able to play into the season with Jake Kumerow. But that shows you the power of Aaron Rodgers and absolutely what he's doing to the New York Jets. So you are correct. When we sit on the sidelines and just put two and two together, we're saying like, you have the power to bring back a coach and a general manager, pick your own offensive coordinator, bring all your best friends over, even though you needed an offensive line or probably could have used that money best being spelled elsewhere. And you're telling us that when they asked you, would you like to go on the IR? And you said, absolutely, keep me on the IR. They overruled you for a meaningless spot here where you're not going to play in another football game. It's absolutely hilarious that we would think that we would buy into it. We're not buying into it right here on the Sports Grid Network on the Early Line. We can see right through that here. More hot NFL topics than football in hour number two right here on the Sports Grid Network.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Getting you ready for week 17 in the NFL. Man, the time absolutely flies when you're having fun, and certainly does here in the NFL. This season is only getting more interesting week to week, which includes this weekend. Now, we do have a Thursday night football game. That's the Jets and the Cleveland Browns. I expect the Jets to, you know, show up for that game and say, all right, it's been fun, and we can't get to the playoffs and hand Cleveland yet another victory. But I love what the NFL has been doing here, Davis. You give me Saturday NFL games, I am all the way in, and particularly when you're giving me a Saturday night football game as a standalone. the Detroit Lions, the Dallas Cowboys from Jerry World. If we set the table for this game, the FanDuel Sportsbook here opened as a -4.5-point favorite for the Dallas Cowboys. That has now been since shifted up to -6, a total which opened up at 51.5, now showing 53.5. The thing I love about this, these are two dome teams that are going to be playing in a dome. I expect points here, but let's start with this equation. The Detroit Lions, everybody loves them. The offense is good. They're the team that's on the come up here. The Dallas Cowboys with back-to-back losses. Some people would say, Davis, hold on. Why are the Dallas Cowboys favored by -6 points? What do you think about that, Davis?
Well, they are favored by -6 points because they're about 6 points better than the Detroit Lions. I mean, they are... I mean, imagine if Tony Pollard was still young Tony Pollard, right? And not this old version of Tony Pollard that can't convert from the 1 yard line. That 1 yard run last week where he got tackled, where like his entire body was in the end zone, but the ball wasn't. I mean, that is just like, I loved Tony Pollard, like 24-year-old Tony Pollard, one of my favorite players to watch of all time. It's been sad, but I mean, Dak, we just did that whole MVP conversation, and I mean, I don't think Dak will win it, but he definitely has played to that level this year. I mean, it was such a common thought, like, oh, you know, Mike McCarthy, he's an idiot. Brian Schottenheimer has only architected like horrible offenses the last decade, and they came in, and you really got to give them credit. They saw this offense and they said, all right, well, Pollard's got no juice and we've got these undrafted free agents and Ronald Jones as our running backs. So let's just air it out and see what Dak can do. You know, CeeDee Lamb is like having this unbelievable season. And I think the Lions are, there's kind of in this interesting spot in their developmental curve where they've got a lot of young guys who are great, Laporta, Gibbs, St. Brown, and then they've got, you know, veterans who are kind of like contributing, Josh Reynolds, Khalif Raymond, Jared Goff, all these guys on offense. It'll be really interesting to see what happens to them if these rumors about Ben Johnson asking for $15 million a year as a head coach next year, like, you have to think it's pretty unlikely that he stays in Detroit as the offensive coordinator. It's one of the reasons why you got to hire an offensive head coach. You can hire as many Dan Campbells as you want, and Dan Campbell might be a great coach. In fact, I think Dan Campbell probably is a great coach, but you're going to have to find someone who's happy to be second fiddle to him because you have a great offensive coordinator. They leave. They go become head coaches elsewhere. Yeah, I just think it's like, honestly, Donnie, to me, a lot of the times betting on the NFL, I just go, who's got the quarterback advantage? And that's kind of the direction that I go in. And the Cowboys have like a huge quarterback advantage. Like it's not even close between Dak and Goff. And the Cowboys defense is like phenomenal as well.
Yeah, that's the Antonio Pierce dilemma out there for Las Vegas. Like, yes, he can motivate guys, but it's really about having a play caller be your head coach. Because why? He won't leave if he's really good here just to get another head coaching job since he's already the head coach with that organization. Let me just ask you a quick question and we'll move on to the next game. Detroit and Dallas. Who's the MVP in this game? Like, who has the big game to propel his team?
CeeDee Lamb. It's definitely CeeDee Lamb, right? It's CeeDee. You know, 9 receptions, 143 yards, and 2 touchdowns. Really, the MVP of the game, I think, would just be don't hand the ball off too many times to Tony Pollard, right? And by the way, we touched on this on the show yesterday, but we really do got to reiterate this. They probably would have blown the doors off of Miami last week if they didn't fumble on the literal 1-inch line, if they didn't hand the ball off to Hunter Lupke, who got 3 touches for some reason, got 3 touches on the very first drive of that game. They literally fumbled as he was going into the end zone. Like, and maybe that's just the Cowboys' curse. They're just like always going to lose in these spots in an unlucky way to torture the fan base. But I think the Cowboys handle business here.
And had the lead late there. And if you are looking at CeeDee Lamb this weekend, Pro Football Focus is 27th ranked coverage skill team in the secondary. That's the Detroit Lions. So maybe we'll get a high aerial assault in this game. 53.5. So some points are expected here. Let's flip it over to Sunday afternoon, 1 o'clock game. Get it started right away. Miami and Baltimore. FanDuel opened this game up as a 3-point favorite here for the Baltimore Ravens. We're now at 3.5 at FanDuel, and basically every outlet here also showing a 3.5. Total opened up at 46.5. That's now up to 40. 7. I think we're in agreement on this as well. I think the Baltimore Ravens are the better team. The Baltimore Ravens know that now that number one prize in the AFC is as simple as let's just win at home here and move on into the playoffs. I like the Ravens this weekend, but also, Davis, do you like the Ravens? And also, what do you think about the total in this game hovering around 47?
I do like the Ravens. I actually would err on the side of going over here because I think that I think Miami will be able to, you know, do their thing. I think they will be able to score a little bit against the Ravens. And I think the Ravens are aching to show that they can hang with any team on offense. Because I think our mental vision of the Ravens has not changed since like 2001, where every Ravens quarterback is Trent Dilfer and the defense is always great and they always run the ball. But like I said earlier, I mean, this is a very different version of the Baltimore Ravens that we are seeing. And I think ultimately just the fact that they are the healthier team coming into this is going to be a pretty big advantage. Like just asking Tua and McDaniel to change the entire environment without Jalen Waddle. And Tyreek is obviously the more important one, but no Jalen Waddle, A-chain with the turf toe. It's a big ask against probably the best or the second best defense in the NFL to say, all right, you got to go put up, you know, 26 on these guys. I think ultimately the Ravens are the side I like.
And how about that Miami Dolphins-Baltimore Ravens game is not either the Sunday night football game or at least the 425 centerpiece. They are starting off with a banger right away on New Year's Eve. Let's flip it over to the West Coast, Pittsburgh and Seattle. It'll be Mason magic once again for the Pittsburgh Steelers going up against Geno Smith in Seattle. And will Seattle need a final drive comeback to win yet another football game this week? The line opened up at 3.5 as a favorite for Seattle. It currently sits at 3.5. The total up from 40.5 to 41.5 here. I just can't quit the Pittsburgh Steelers. I see, let's go, ooh, they got offense now, Davis, but now they're on the road. We know Mason Rudolph is going to start. Is that going to make a difference? And where are you going in this game?
I can quit the Pittsburgh Steelers. It's pretty easy for me to quit the Pittsburgh Steelers. I know Mason Rudolph, this is a funny one. So for fantasy football, Mitch Trubisky and Mason Rudolph have already each posted a top 12 score in a given week. Kenny Pickett, whole season, 0 top 12 scores for the entire season. I know it's a little bit more complicated than that, but I think we can say at this point, like, the Steelers do not have, maybe they're the team that should give Baker Mayfield the huge contract or the team to, trade for Justin Fields. I don't know if Justin Fields is really Steelers material. I think the difference between these two teams is that Seahawks can turn it up when they need to. They can dial up the DK Metcalf long bomb. They can they just keep getting in these fourth quarter spots, and doesn't matter who the quarterback is. It's just buoyed by the fact that, I mean, they have maybe the best three wide receiver group in the NFL right now.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how this plays out. Again, because I keep looking at the Steelers and I say to myself, an average offensive line, two quality backs, couple quality wideouts here. Can we just get a quarterback that can deliver the football to get these guys back in gear? And oh yeah, let's welcome back George Pickens into the NFL, who looks like that player we always thought he could be. Maybe Mason Rudolph, a little bit of that offensive rejuvenation here for the Pittsburgh Steelers. But right, we're not going to be surprised when they go out there, the 12s handle their business. Pittsburgh scores, 16 or less points in a way they go into their offseason, and Mike Tomlin not getting his 500 season or better here in the NFL. The college football bowl season is bowling along. Mark Zeno is going to help us with a couple winners here and looking forward to the national championship.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Time to go bowling right here on the early line on a Wednesday morning. It's Donnie Wrightside, it's Davis Maddock, and we welcome in Mark Zeno to get our bowling officially underway. Now, the next two segments, we're going to talk about today's bowls as well as the college football playoff, which is now on the horizon. Mark, welcome in. Hopefully your holiday was good and you are well. Are you well?
We are well. Santa was good to the kids. Not so much to me, but, at this point in my life, I don't need Santa to be good to me. So as long as he took care of the kiddies and cashed a couple of tickets. Hey, we got home with UNLV's team total last night, so I'm not upset. I'll take that. That is a Christmas gift any day of the week.
So you're not getting Christmas gifts here that can be cashed in as tickets here. That's what we look forward to as adults now with legalized sports gambling. It's fantastic. Santa can be anywhere at any time, which includes, Mark, today. We got four games on the slate. Let's take a look with the start here. 2 p.m. Eastern, an ESPN televised game. That's Virginia Tech and Tulane. Virginia Tech comes in this game 6-6. Tulane at 11-2. This is the Military Bowl. Here's my favorite part. Presented by GoBowling.com. If we set the table for this one, Mark, taking a look, a 43.5 is a total, down from the opening number at 48.5. Rain is in the forecast, but Virginia Tech, the look ahead line, Mark, 4.5, now up to 10.5. What gives here between Tech and Tulane?
A ton of opt-outs for Tulane, right? Willie Fritz is gone, the head coach. I think the DC is gone as well. It's just not the same Tulane team that went on this year. I mean, look, this is too big of a number to lay with Virginia Tech. However, I think they're probably more motivated. Their starting quarterback, Kyren Drones, has been fantastic down the stretch. He's a guy I'd like to bet on. I bet on him the final week of the regular season against Virginia, and he smoked that Virginia Cavaliers team on the road. So, I mean, I think Virginia Tech is the right side here. I would probably look to their team total again. You know, you have to, in some of these games, just sort of part and parcel what is still factual that we know from the regular season and what is not. You know, it's hard to figure out what Tulane is going to be given how many opt-outs they've had and the coaching changes. Virginia Tech looks pretty stable, but you can't swing from a touchdown, you know, from 4.5 to 10.5 and go, okay, I'm going to bet a bad number at this point in time. So maybe look to Virginia Tech team total over if you feel like they're going to be on the right side of this thing. But, you know, I would argue that Tulane is unbettable at this point.
Well, I mean, and that happens with a lot. That happens with a lot of these bowl games, which is like a real bummer because you see, for example, last night with KU versus UNLV, some of these bowl games do still matter a ton to the schools. You know, like Kansas winning a bowl game. It's been over 5,000 days since Kansas University won a bowl game, so that one really mattered. We are moving on now to North Carolina versus West Virginia. Again, another game. It could have been awesome, right? This could have been a really fun game. Had Drake May played, had, you know, West Virginia had all of their horses. Obviously, we've got loads of opt-outs here for North Carolina. Still a pretty healthy total at 56.5. Get me up to speed on North Carolina and West Virginia, Zeno.
Well, again, I think, you know, when you look at offensively, you know, what North Carolina has lost or is not playing Drake May and wide receiver Tez Walker. I mean, these are key parts of their offense, you know, and look at some of the other guys who were injured, Bryson Nesbitt, you know, tight end John Copenhaver. Like, these are guys that were a big part of why Carolina scored a ton of points each and every week. And the natural inclination is to go, does this thing go under? That's what I would tend to think. Maybe it would go under. Just because, again, these are, West Virginia is not exactly a high-flying offense, right? That's not a team that you think of when you think, it, despite the fact they play in the Big 12, that's going to score a ton of points. So I would lean on the under here, given what North Carolina is missing. But usually, again, when I get to these games, guys, I kind of just run away when I've seen so much change. Unless I locked in at the very beginning, where I saw a game that I really liked, which I did with Rutgers back when the line first posted and that game first came out, which is coming up on Thursday. And I'll live with the results just because I feel like it's the right side. Once the line moves this much, I kind of have to just stay away from it.
It's interesting, too, because as Davis was bringing up here, and again, growing up as like an 80s kid, getting into football, you know, 1985, 1986-ish, right through to the early 2000s, you watch these bowl games, these would be absolutely fantastic handicaps where most people, Mark, would be jumping in the minute you saw the bowl schedule, because why? You know who's playing in those games. You already know the motivation at that time, and those guys are going to bring their A game. But more of a handicap on the game, it's what's the motivation going to be? Who's the starting quarterback? And it's not even the starting quarterback. It's now teams with starting quarterback backups and third-string quarterbacks in the porthole where four-string guys who haven't even taken a snap for their football team end up playing here. And again, we take a look at another game tonight, 8 o'clock start on Fox. That's Louisville versus USC. You take a look at Louisville, they were 10-1 at one point this season, collapsed in their last two games against Kentucky and Florida State in the ACC championship game. USC comes into this game at 7-5, but also we know Caleb Williams won't be playing in this ball game either. If we line this up, the total opened up here at 57.5. We now see 58.5. So we're still expecting some points and roughly a touchdown favorite here for Louisville. Louisville lost the ACC, but who has more motivation in this game for your side, Mark, and who are you going to take?
All right, well, this is a game actually I can get involved in here simply because this feels like way too many points to give USC. Like, I again, Caleb Williams isn't playing. but it's still Lincoln Riley, the head coach, and it's still an offense that can generate scores regardless of who's under center, right? Like, I hope a 7.5 is still out there. If there's a 7.5 still out there, I would take USC here. It's just too many points. This is the same Louisville team that lost to Florida State with a quarterback who basically looked like he should have been playing in D3, right, in the ACC championship game. Like, that was bad about how bad Louisville lost in that game. I know Florida State's defense is really good, but still, like, I don't know. This just feels like way too many points to give a team like USC with the talent they have across the board and what they're expected to do, what their expectations were this year. There's a wide talent gap between USC and Louisville. Even the backups to a certain extent for USC probably would still be playing above the starters of Louisville.
That was my thought too. It's like, just look at the recruiting pool for USC versus the recruiting pool for Louisville, you know, and like, obviously USC, this crazy disappointing season, they can't tackle anyone. They have like the worst defense I have ever seen for a team that like thought they were serious. But like, the 9th wide receiver on USC was probably the best wide receiver prospect that his high school has ever had. You know, the, like, you know, whatever guy is going to be, you know, Deuce Robinson coming out for USC was probably like a 4-star Rivals recruit and would have started as a true freshman at Louisville. So I'm with you there. And I don't know, maybe Lincoln Riley would like to actually like win a football game, you know, maybe here in the end, just to show the old USC boosters and some of the recruits that USC is a serious team. Like, going 7-5 and with Caleb Williams, number one overall, it's not great. It's definitely not what you want. All right, we've got our nightcap here, the Texas Bowl between Texas A&M and Oklahoma State. For on the Oklahoma State side, I mean, I think that a fair amount of their guys are going to be involved in this one. I know Texas A&M is down to 3 scholarship wide receivers. They are down to Moose Muhammad, Jahdy Walker, and Micah Tees as scholarship wide receivers. Never love going into a bowl having walk-ons, you know, having to play tight end and rotational wide receiver. So how are we breaking this one down, Zeno?
I mean, how can you not play Oklahoma State here? I mean, plain and simple. Like, you know, Oklahoma State is basically intact, particularly on offense, right? Alan Bowman's still starting. They still have their top running back in Ollie, who's been fantastic all year long. Who's coaching Texas A&M? Who's playing for Texas A&M? Like, the fact that Texas A&M is still favored in this matchup just is more about SEC bias, I think, than anything else. I know that Texas A&M may have better athletes, and Oklahoma State's defense is not very good. But I mean, in the big picture here, like, Oklahoma State is still intact and Texas A&M is not. So you got to take the 7 points here with Oklahoma State.
So we take a look at these games that are played today. And again, it's supposed to be as we go forward, Mark, the better the games get, the easier they are. The next segment, we're going to talk about that national championship picture. Let's have a little bit of a free roll here over the next couple days, because there are more bowl games Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Do you have any games picked out? And also, I'm a big Miami Hurricanes fan, but again, I don't handicap the bowl games all that much. Are they just the best fade of all time? Unless they're playing like the college football playoff, which they don't play in anymore. Are they the greatest fade on the history of the earth?
DRS, I locked in as soon as this line posted with Rutgers +4.5. Long gone. Rutgers is now a favorite. So I'm already polishing my closing line value trophy, my CLV trophy here, and I've been doing so ever since. I mean, in reality, let's just assume for argument's sake that Miami had 80 to 85% of the players all starting, including their quarterback. Do you really think anybody from Miami is flying north to New York City to go sit at Yankee Stadium in 35-degree weather and wind to go watch Miami play Rutgers? There's not going to be a single Miami fan there, period. You know what everybody from Rutgers is going to do? Drive 25 minutes north to Jersey Turnpike, get off the Major Deegan, go right up to Yankee Stadium, and they're packed in Scarlet Knight fans. That's number one. Number two, Rutgers is fairly intact for this game. They have almost no opt-outs and nobody heading to the draft. So this is a team that's going into this game that wants to win a bowl game, right? I mean, Rutgers has been a laughingstock in college football for several years now. The fact that they're in a bowl game, a post-Christmas bowl game, speaks volumes to sort of what this program has started to ascend to back with Greg Schiano at the helm. So it's been several years since they've won a bowl game, several years since they've been in a bowl game. Motivation factor is there. But Miami has a ton of opt-outs and a ton of guys not in this game. But I knew it was going to go like this. I didn't even wait for the opt-outs. I just looked at where Miami was and going, oh, you think there's any chance that anybody from Miami is flying to New York City to go watch this game? Hell no, they're not. It's going to be all Scarlet Knight fans there. Miami's going to mail this thing in. They're going to get smoked, or at least they should.
It feels like it's, and again, they play in practice in 85 degree weather. They're going to New York City here, freezing cold. That's your bowl bonus here. And play Rutgers, who it's not exactly a rival. Oh, it's a Big East rival from back in the day. Not so much here. Let me ask you this quickly here. Florida State now catching 17.5 points by Georgia. Is it going to be a blowout? Is that game a blowout?
No, I think it's too many points in general. Like, Kirby Smart's not going to mail this bowl game in. And there's talk of Brock Bowers even playing in this bowl game, which is insane for Georgia. But I don't think Kirby's going to let his guys mail it in, but I don't think they're also going to run this up and beat the team.
Georgia Pride versus Florida State. Mark, we're going to talk national championship coming up next, people. Don't go anywhere. Come on back.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Feels like we've been talking about it for months on end. We just wait and wait for the college football playoff to actually appear on our TV, and it finally will on January 1st. A doubleheader, 5 o'clock and 8:45 Eastern. That's Alabama, Michigan, Texas, and Washington. I'm Donnie Wrightside, along with Davis Maddock and Mark Zinno, helping us break down the bowl scene. Look, we've talked bowls ad nauseum. Do they mean anything? What are they worth? The one thing that we do know, these bowl games on New Year's Day be worth every penny here, and I can't wait to start the break. Down. So, Mark, let's get popping right here. Alabama and Michigan. This line hasn't moved. Open up as a 1.5-point favorite here towards Michigan. We still see the 1.5. The total has moved. The initial early line at the FanDuel Sportsbook, 46.5. That now sits at 45.5. Let's start with Alabama, Michigan. What are your thoughts on this game?
Again, I think there's a certain narrative out there that Alabama is automatically going to win this game. It's Nick Saban. The SEC got in the playoffs. The college football playoff loves the SEC. Jim Harbaugh can't win the big one. There's all these narratives out there that sort of put Alabama in the driver's seat for this game. But I say this routinely. You don't bet narratives, and you shouldn't bet narratives. The fact of the matter is here is Michigan is a better team than Alabama and has proven that over the course of the season. Now, you could argue that they didn't play a tougher schedule as Alabama did, but still, Alabama struggled with teams like Auburn. They struggled with South Florida. You know, they've been in spots here where they could have lost a lot of games. Give them some credit, but you know, for my money here, this Michigan team is just a notch above Alabama. I like the Wolverines here. At the end of the day, I think this comes down to the passing game for both teams, because the only shot Alabama really has, in my opinion, is to be able to do the one thing that Jalen Milroe and the Alabama offense do better than everybody in the country other than LSU, and that's take shots down the field. So if they take some shots down the field, hit some big plays, or get some defensive pass interference calls that'll help move the sticks on third down, then Alabama's going to have a major advantage. But I would argue that the Michigan Wolverines' pass defense and their secondary is as good as anybody in the country, and they may not be susceptible to that. So if Alabama can't hit those, then guess what? They're going to have a hard time moving the football and scoring points against a Michigan defense that's one of the best in the country. I don't think either one of these teams will be able to run the ball very much. So that goes back to the passing game. How much do you trust J.J. McCarthy? How much do you trust Jalen Milroe? I think that really is where the game lies for this more than anything.
And I mean, the quarterback props would agree with you on that. You know, Milroe is way more yards, 242.5, 1.5 passing touchdowns. Now the under is favored there. Obviously, the thing that Milroe adds is that if you let him get into space, if you let him get out of the pocket, I mean, he's going to punish them at least once in this game, right? Now, whether it be like a 3rd and 13 that he converts with his legs, or he, you know, makes a spectacular red zone rushing touchdown. J.J. McCarthy is kind of in that, you know, he's the point guard. He's Brock Purdy. He executes the offense. Now, there are people out there who will tell you that McCarthy actually has just not been asked to do that much. And when called upon, he could play better. He might, you know, end up in a spot where he is asked to do a little bit more in this game. What do you make of the player props for both of these quarterbacks? Kind of sounds like maybe you would lean on some of the overs there for Jalen Milroe if you were a Bama backer.
I mean, I would argue that there's a world where J.J. McCarthy could stay under and Michigan can still win. And there's a world where Jalen Milroe can go over and Alabama can still lose, right? We have a game script in our back pocket for J.J. McCarthy to go under that number and then still win. Go look at what happened in the Michigan-Penn State game. I think it's fair to say that Penn State's defense and Alabama's defense are very comparable. But in the second half of that game, it was just running the ball nonstop against the Nittany Lions, and Michigan just pounded them into oblivion and won that football game. That there's a game script out there that works. But I would argue, again, I think that if Michigan is going to win this game, J.J. McCarthy has to go over that number. They've got to be able to do both run the ball effectively and pass the ball effectively. My biggest concern with, you know, Jalen Milroe, again, is if he's throwing a lot, right, and they're not completing them or they are trailing, you're going to see those numbers go up late in the second half and maybe garbage time yards if Alabama gets ahead by two. I mean, sorry, if Michigan gets ahead by two scores in the fourth quarter, you're going to see Milroe throwing a ton. So I would be weary of just jumping on the over in both of these. But I think when it comes down to it, if Milroe stays under, I have a hard time seeing Alabama's running game getting a whole bunch of chunk yards against this Michigan run defense.
I could see in this game, Mark, because Michigan's MO, we're bigger, stronger, and tougher than you. And you can run a little bit on that Alabama defense. So if we take a look at some of these rushing props, you look at Donovan Edwards and Blake Corum here from a Michigan perspective. And by the way, we talked about Christian McCaffrey so much in the NFL scoring touchdowns every game. Well, Blake Corum did that, scored touchdowns in every single game, which included the Iowa game. And in his last five games, has scored at least two or more rushing touchdowns with the one game mixed in the Purdue Boilermakers game. He scored three times. You take a look at the FanDuel Sports book and just look at the anytime touchdown market. Obviously, Corum is expensive, but again, it's only expensive as what you're willing to pay, and or does the juice matter if it does win? If you're betting this game from a backfield perspective, would it be the yards prop that you're looking at Corum? Maybe two or more touchdowns with Corum? How do you pair up that backfield for Michigan, and how do you think they do against Alabama?
I mean, I would actually look at whoever the better receiver is, and I think it's Donovan Edwards, you know, as far as catching passes out of the backfield, and look for the receiving yards prop, because that's really what may happen is if they get stuff, they may use the short passing game as an extension of the run game, right? And screens and everything else to, you know, take advantage of aggressive Alabama front seven, if that's what's happening. That to me looks like the one market where you could actually gain some value and gain some traction on. It's hard for me to believe Blake Corum is just going to be able to run for 80 to 90 yards in this game straight ahead against Alabama. Just, you know, you give Saban 3 weeks to prepare and he's seen enough tape on these guys. You know, as much as I think Michigan's a better team, I'm not going to discount Saban as a head coach and his ability to prepare his team for any opponent in a game. I just don't see that happening. I think between Edwards and Corum, as far as rushing yards is concerned, Jim Harbaugh used a healthy dose of both, and you might be some cannibalization there. But Edwards being the better pass catcher out of the backfield, maybe the guy you look for in a receiving yards prop for a running back.
I like that. I like that angle. I mean, that would be a wrinkle to throw at Alabama, keep them off balance. Because what you don't want if you are Harbaugh and the Wolverines, you do not want that defensive front seven pinning their ears back and just, you know, going after J.J. McCarthy every single snap. We're going to change directions now to the Sugar Bowl. We've got Washington and Texas. I bet we are going to disagree on this one. We disagreed on Washington and Oregon when they played in that championship. I'm a big Penix guy. I think Penix actually probably is going to be a decent NFL quarterback. We'll see if the evaluators agree with me there when they do the draft in April. They are playing against the University of Texas. Texas is slightly favored here, 4.5 points. Zeno, how are you breaking UT versus Washington down?
Well, it took me about 2 months, but I finally learned my lesson that I don't necessarily want to step in front of Washington. Now, in fairness, Davis, you know, I bet against Washington because they were double-digit favorites everywhere and they weren't outpacing everybody, right? But the only time that I bet against them was with Oregon twice, and, you know, Oregon lost both games. So, you know, those are the two sides I was wrong on. You're right, I was wrong. I give you your props. But I'm not going to step in front of Washington here as an underdog and not want to take the points. However, I don't necessarily know that I want to step in front of Texas either. This is tough for me to figure. Guys, I can't get away from. My head keeps going to, with all the hubbub about these two offenses and how they can move the ball and how they can score points, can't get away from a first half under here that feels like it's going to be sneaky. As both of these teams come into the game, a little bit slow, a little bit tense. You know, they're not going to take as many huge shots early on because the risk reward to get behind early isn't necessarily worth it to coaches in a game like this. You know, they want to try to play it slow and feel the other opponent out. Plus, Washington's defense, it's not great, but it's much better than Oklahoma State's. That we know, right? Like, I know Texas' defense isn't as good as Oregon's, but still, this is a spot where it just kind of feels like a first half under where we get less scoring between these two teams than anticipated. You know, look, if they come out like gangbusters, forget it. You know, it's going to be the shootout that we're all going to love to watch. I don't think it's going to slow down in the second half, but I would tend to think that these two teams would play a little bit slow at the start. You might get, you know, something like a you know, 17-10 kind of first half, and or 17-13 kind of first half, and it stays under.
Alabama, by the way, and Michigan, we're expecting a lower scoring game, low 40s on the total. This is the direct opposite. We're in the 60s here. We're expecting points. So if we focus on the two quarterbacks here, Mark, from your perspective, Michael Penix Jr. at the FanDuel Sportsbook, his passing total prop, 309.5. Quinn Ewers at 287.5. Does this way dictate who you're going to take quarterback on you think is going to win that football game? Because a lot of times I'll look at games and go, all right, I think this team is going to lose. They'll be down in the fourth quarter, which means I'm throwing the entire way. Penix and Ewers, which way would you lean? Who gets over the total, or maybe you're looking at one of those guys to go under their total in this game?
I mean, again, I would lean on Penix just because Penix has faced Oregon twice and had success against them two times. Again, Texas' defense is nowhere near as good as Oregon's. It's good, but it ain't that good. Oregon's been a top 20 defense all year long, and no disrespect to Texas, but the Pac-12 is much more of a gauntlet with better offenses than the Big 12 has been for a better part of this year. So I think Texas, you know, for as much as they are a fast defense and can get after the quarterback, Penix is prepared for all that. The gauntlet of the Pac-12 has been what prepared him for this moment. So I would look at Penix to go over more than I would at Ewers.
I think that seems reasonable. I mean, I'll say this. No chance to me that Washington is able to win that game if Penix doesn't hit all his overs. Like the correlation there is going to be Penix has got to have, I mean, probably the best game he's had other than that second game against Oregon in order for them to beat Texas. Cause Texas is legit. I think Texas is kind of, they've been a little bit disrespected because everyone wanted to see Georgia in and Florida State. And, you know, it kind of feels like Texas got the, you know, because they're Texas, they got in, but they are legit. So which brings us to the odds overall. We have Michigan is the relatively slight favorite over the other teams here. They are plus 200 on the FanDuel Sportsbook. Texas is plus 250. Bama is plus 220. And Washington is all the way down there at plus 650. Obviously, what's feeding into this is, you know, the odds of the semifinal games and then what the eventual line would be. Because if Washington does win, they would be, well, I don't know, you know, 9.5-point dogs to either of the teams that won, maybe more than that in the eventual championships. So, Zeno, what do you make of that odds board?
Well, again, I'm somebody who's holding a ticket on Alabama to win the national title of 13-1 that I got back at the end of November when nobody thought that they were going to be in this spot. So I have some hedging to do against Michigan, to say the least, in that game, given where the numbers are right now. And I do think Michigan is the best team. You know, just kind of unfortunate draw the way it all worked out. Who would have known back in November when I made that ticket that Alabama would be facing the best team in the land? So that said, I think Washington is live at plus 650. You can't deny it at this point in time. Like, if they can get past Texas, there's no reason to believe they couldn't beat either Alabama or Michigan. And given the number that you're getting, it's probably the best odds that you're going to get. So a flyer on Washington might be in my back pocket. But again, I've got to figure out how to play and how much to wager on Michigan in that game. Sort of had my bets on my national ticket for national title championship at 13-1 for Alabama.
We take a look at those two games being played on New Year's Day, Alabama, Michigan, Texas, and Washington. Slight favorite here for Michigan and also for the Texas Longhorns. Totals 44.5 and 62.5, Mark. What is your best play for New Year's Day here?
I'm still going to be Michigan. I can't get away from how much better they are than Alabama. I don't know that it's as close as people want to make it. Again, I think there's a certain amount of odds makers installing this line where it was based off of the public perception of Alabama and how much they were going to be bet by the public seeing this number less than a field goal. Now, I'll say this much. If the line flips, it is significant. You can't ignore that. I don't think it will. I think on the day of the game, you'll see heavy Michigan money come in and might push this up towards 2.5 and 3, but I'm back in Michigan.
There you go. We got everything up to date on the college football playoff. Mark Zeno, the mouth in the South, ready to let it rip, and also backing his boys from the SEC. The Alabama Crimson Tide could be a nice New Year's Day present. We got Fade the Public coming up next. Don't go anywhere. It's the Buffalo Bills.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Right back out of here. Quick little segment before we head into hour number three of the early line. I want to thank Mark Zeno coming on, talking a little college football. Bowl season is here, but I still don't feel like bowl season actually starts until New Year's Day with the college football playoff. Really looking forward to both of those games. Low spreads in both of those. One low scoring game expected, one high scoring game expected. You're getting everything you want out of those games. But the questions right now, not really coming up, Davis Maddock, about college football. It's about the Buffalo Bills. And our topic here through Sports Grid, the poll is, how far will the Buffalo Bills go? Much easier to read on this tweet today. Lose in the divisional round, make the AFC Championship, make the Super Bowl, or win the Super Bowl here. And it looks like most people thinking the Buffalo Bills will not be making the Super Bowl here, Davis. How about that?
I mean, it's kind of crazy to me that they do have all this momentum. Josh Allen, you know, we outlined the case pretty clearly earlier in the show, how he can like actually win MVP with two really strong performances here to end the year. That week 18 game might be like effectively a playoff game between the Miami Dolphins and the Buffalo Bills in terms of how the seeding shakes out. And the Bills are looking, I mean, right now, the most likely, if you play out, you know, all the simulations, the most likely thing is they get to play a team they've already beat this year, my Kansas City Chiefs. Now, I hope they get embarrassed in that game. I hope they score 0 points and James Cook has 30 rushes for 2 yards. But man, I will say I will not feel good about the Bills and the Chiefs in that game if that is what ends up being the seeding. I'm actually now kind of rooting for the Bills to end up winning the division. So that doesn't happen. I think the most likely scenario actually is the Bills do make the AFC Championship.
Wouldn't it be the year, right? Because the Buffalo Bills were, we knew they were talented under Josh Allen, but the last 2 years, the Bills were supposed to get to the AFC Championship game, supposed to get to the Super Bowl. Then it sort of got off the bandwagon this year and midway through the season, like, yeah, this Buffalo Bills team isn't going anywhere. They're probably going to fire their head coach and not even make the playoffs. And boy, what a regression here that we've seen out of Josh Allen. So it would be quite interesting if this is the year that the Buffalo Bills actually win the AFC. We'll talk about that and much, much more. Hour number three coming up in under a minute. Right here on the Sports Grid Network. We'll be right back.
Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.